a lot of companies try to use Zoom and just put a bunch of people on a Zoom call and they all have their video and audio on. But realistically, in those cases, you've probably got 100 people that have their cameras on and their microphones on, or maybe they're just on mute and their cameras are on. But you got 100 people watching two people scratch their nose, and maybe those two people are the ones dominating the conversation. That's not engagement. That might be feedback for the speaker, but that's not engagement.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand.Live show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome to another episode of the Your Living Brand.Live show. Welcome back, my wonderful audience. You guys are great. Every single week, you share, you like, you comment, and you communicate with me and let me know what you like, what you don't like, what you want to hear. I try to answer it all, so thank you all very much. This week, I've got Chris Nesbitt from Ace Virtual Events joining me. Chris and I have known each other forever, and we're going to talk about the future of the event industry. I have spoken somewhere between 80 to 100 virtual events during the pandemic. I'll tell you, some of them have been good, some of them have been bad, and a lot of them have been downright ugly. So I want to get into this. Chris, welcome to the show. Let's get this started.
Hey, Ben.
How you been?
I'm good. It's been a busy time, obviously, for the last 2 years. We've just been nonstop. Kind of got started when the pandemic got started. I come from background of trade shows and high level marketing for industrial manufacturing, corporate environment, and just had an opportunity where I wasn't doing anything right at the time when COVID hit. And we were kind of looking for an option. I was running a marketing company at the time. We were looking for an option to do something different with events and kind of saw this pandemic thing coming down the tracks. And so we jumped right in. We found a platform that we really liked and I met up with a couple other guys that had their own reasons for being involved and wanting to touch into the virtual events world. And we just started playing with it. We spent hundreds of hours on this virtual platform and we learned that we were pretty good at it. We figured a lot of things out. So we built a business around it. It's been really good.
That's awesome. We'll get into all of that. But my question to you is, what brought you here? You come from a very diverse background. And what made that shift? Because we all had that shift in COVID. We all sat there and had this, wait a second here. Whatever we're doing in the past wasn't working. There were challenges. We needed to do something different, or we saw a new direction, or we saw an opportunity and we jumped at it. So bring us back into this. Let's step back a little bit. Give us a little bit of an idea of where you came from and where you are today. And then we'll get into where the future of the industry is going.
Absolutely. So one of the things, at least for me personally, from my previous jobs that really struck home with me was kind of the logistics battle that goes on with trade shows in particular. There's a lot of lift that takes place from the time that you decide to participate in a trade show, not including all the research and everything that goes into it prior to. But then once you decide to get involved, then there's all these games that you have to play with the trade show companies to get the right placement, and the right square footage that you want, and the cost per square foot that you want, and all these different things. There's these like point systems that are involved. And that was always a nightmare to get involved with that. And then from that point, it was also being involved in the budget discussions about these trade shows. You want to do a larger show, it's going to cost you X times amount. And then from there, you know, you really have to decide how much you want to spend per year. And there's a lot of hard decisions that get made. And then there's a lot of hidden costs that are associated with that. So the budget discussion really played a big factor to where we are at today with the virtual events, because during that time when I was coordinating all of that, it was an ongoing conversation with executives, you know, the CEO, the CFO. They did not like the cost factor. I mean, it was a very large marketing activity. In some cases, certain years we would spend up close to $1 million a year on trade shows. Some shows would be several hundred thousand dollars just for one show. And then, of course, you have to fly your staff out there. You have to put them up for the week, or in the case of the people setting it up, it'd be several weeks. You also had to factor in all the food and the flights and the cars and all these different elements. And that was above and beyond just the plot space and the decorations and all the things you need for a trade show. So trade shows in particular were a very expensive component And we did quite a bit of review on it, and it was a very asymmetrical type ROI on these events, right? So you would put a ton of money into it and you would probably get a lot of like great exposure, but you wouldn't necessarily always get that sale that would pay for everything. And so, or it might happen, but it would happen after a bunch of other activities that happened down the road as well. So it was just a piece of the whole equation to make a sale. And so there was always kind of this background conversation that went on about reducing the cost. If there was an alternative that we could explore, or an alternative activity that we could explore, something along those lines. And there was always this background conversation going on with the executives. And there really weren't a lot of good alternatives prior to COVID or prior to the pandemic. What we saw was there was a lot of webinars, but there still wasn't a lot of buy-in on webinars. Webinars are kind of very static. And so there's that whole thing to deal with as far as like keeping your audience engaged. So you weren't getting that one-on-one conversation with the customer, which is really what trade shows are all about. And so what we wanted to do is, when we started this company, we like, this is it, right? You know, I mean, it's like the light bulb went off. All of a sudden you have an alternative option. And now you have an environment where trade shows are gone. It's just overnight, they were gone. And so we just got really lucky to be thinking ahead and knowing the question, knowing the problem far enough in advance that we were able to ramp up really quickly and try and provide that solution.
And that's interesting because, I mean, I've been involved in trade shows for 30 plus years. Started off Comdex 30 plus years ago, became CES. And, you know, you have these trade show booths that are 100 by 100 and 50 people to man them, and the expense that goes into them in terms of building and promotional marketing and the flights and the hotels and et cetera. And they were big events. They were huge events and they were exciting. And you had lots of people walking through the booth. But you always sat there and wondered, what percentage of the people that are coming in your booth are people that are there for the promotional marketing piece, to see what's new, to see what's cool, versus the number of people that are actually buyers that can justify the amount of space and the amount of time and the staff that goes along with it. And so I started hearing about virtual trade shows 10 plus years ago, you know, over 10 years ago, and they were horrific. And one of the big reasons they were horrific was technology. There really wasn't broadband internet like there was today. There really wasn't the CPU power to be able to run these virtual trade shows. Nobody had actually really gone through and basically what it was, I look at it as like the metaverse 1.0, where it's cute, it's interesting, it's not really practical, but it's a place to start. So the question is, why do we think today that we're so much better off and that we may be able to take some of the experience and some of the connection and some of the feeling of actually being at a live event, shaking people's hands and meeting face-to-face and having those one-on-one conversations, and feel that we can actually bring it into a digital space without it feeling artificial, fake, and contrived?
Well, that's a great question. So I think there's a couple factors here. Obviously, pandemic did change everything. And I hate to continue to reference the pandemic, but it's such a huge component here, right?
It's a black swan moment. It is truly a black swan moment. We have to recognize that.
It forced us into a different mindset. Because we didn't have any other options, we really truly had to explore our only options. And through doing that, it's given us an opportunity to really commit to making some of these changes. And I think that was a big part of it. Sometimes there's options available, but we're not ready to commit to making the decision to use those options in place of, right? So we kind of were forced to do that, at least for a year. I do think that there's hybrid opportunities coming out now, and there's in-person stuff is starting to come back. And so there are a lot of other factors that are being in play today, but we did have a range of time where we didn't have that opportunity. And so it forced us to do these things. And in addition to that, I think a lot of the technology that we utilize today has been in development for many years. You know, I mean, you think about Skype. Skype's been around for a decade. It's not anything new. Yeah, I mean, maybe even longer. It's nothing new, but that has translated into companies like Zoom and the platform we use, Remo. And there's all these different components that have really just come together and given us an opportunity. You referenced one, broadband connectivity is huge. If we didn't have broadband, this would be nowhere as comfortable as it is today. And so all these pieces kind of came together at the same time. The other side of it too, is that the surge in demand really pushed a lot of financial resources into the sector, which allowed a lot of research and development to take place because the need was so great. And these companies were just trying to keep up and keep customers happy through this whole thing. And so those two things put together, the need just kind of appearing out of nowhere, and the amount of money that's being flushed into the system, is those two things together really made a big difference. And then, of course, like I said, the having to commit to making it happen. But, you know, I mean, overall, I would say that they're different, right? They are different. It's not a one-on-one comparison. You don't get to say a trade show is the same as this virtual event. In a lot of cases, we see customers are scaling back a little bit on their trade shows and still doing them, but they're also adding in the component of the virtual event because they can do more of them faster and a little bit less expensive. So there's just more options. And it's same as when we had the option of trade shows and webinars. So it's not a one-to-one replacement, but it's becoming closer to a one-to-one replacement if you're comparing in person and virtual. So
what have we learned over the last 2 years? I mean, as I said, at the very beginning of the preamble, I saw the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, I've been on some horrific platforms. I've been part of some horrific trade show events, some webinar events, conference events where I've been a keynote speaker. I've been with some good ones and also some really great ones. So what have you seen that we've learned? Because it's a trial and error industry where we're going to get better because of the failures that we've had. So what are the major things that you see that people have done wrong over the last 2 years? And what have we learned from that? And what can we take away that we can make that better?
Right. Like you said, there's good, bad, and ugly. The things that we've learned that are not great to be doing is, like, if you try to make things too complex, it's just like with a trade show, the more moving pieces you have, the more likely something's going to get forgotten, done wrong, or whatever it happens to be. So we've seen certain events that just are too complex for what you're trying to do. So there has to be a little bit of give and take. And we're there to help guide people through that, but still are able to accomplish a lot. But maybe that sound effect doesn't have to happen at that exact moment. Maybe it could happen a split second later. That kind of stuff is important to be flexible on. But at the same time, the things that are being done right is that companies are learning that branding is important in these events. You have to really make sure that that space, we work a lot with having really kind of interactive environments beyond just the black box Zoom deal, right? So how do you incorporate your brand? How do you make that unique to your company? And we've learned how to assist people to do that much better than we did when we first started. When we first got started, it was kind of, we would put colors on things and that would be enough. And now we really go out to make sure that the look and feel and, like, the furniture, I mean, it's hard to describe over audio. You kind of have to see it, but we design these environments with chairs and tables and people can click and go to these different spaces to actually.
And I'll have images of those if you go to yourlivingbrand.live and go into the show notes, I'll have some images of what the platform looks like.
And so that's, as a reference point, that's a really good example. Like, we found that it has to be more than just a video call with 100 people. It has to have some options, right? People have to have some choice involved as to what conversation they want to be part of. Who do they want to talk to? How do they move around? And then you also have to have some structured time as well, where you're actually accomplishing what you're trying to accomplish. So there's probably some form of a presentation, and it's like at a trade show, you know, that has its own dedicated time and it's structured and it you know, moves through a timeline or a show flow in that sense. So there's different parts of the show, but I think that having a well-organized plan that's flexible and the branding are things that we've learned that have made this whole process smoother for the people that we work with and more successful and efficient for them as well. What needs to get done, and so it's easier to get there with people.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. The big thing that I heard you say was engagement and interaction, because let's face it, the majority of the webinars that are out there, and if you look at webinar engagement 20 months ago, you would have hundreds, if not thousands of people on a webinar. Today, you're lucky if you've got 150, 20, sometimes 8 people on a webinar, and you're looking out and all you see is a blank box with the mic turned off. That's all you see, because people are webinaring out. People are absolutely webinaring out. Because there is no engagement. It is PowerPoint from hell. It's this long, drawn out, droning talk. And people think that they can do the exact same thing at live that they did in a virtual arrangement. They can talk for 60 minutes where you might have been able to get away with that as a keynote. There's no way you can do that in a virtual thing. People want to be engaged. It needs to be interactive. It needs to be a way for the audience to be part of the scenario. How have we developed beyond that? Because you take a look at the WebExes and the Zoom calls and all the other platforms that you see out there, that the majority of these things are out there, it doesn't really enable that. It doesn't enable there to be two-way communication unless it's those snide comments in the chat room. So how do you really bring the audience into the conversation and make them feel valued, welcome, and part of the situation?
So one of the things that we found pretty early on, and so this has always kind of been a component of our model, is that you have to have what we call virtual water cooler moments, the ability to run across somebody and strike up a conversation and have it be fairly casual. And that drives engagement better than anything we found. You're absolutely right about maybe you've got an active chat box, or maybe a lot of companies try to use Zoom and just put a bunch of people on a Zoom call and they all have their video and audio on. But realistically, in those cases, you've probably got 100 people that have their cameras on and their microphones on, or maybe they're just on mute and their cameras are on. But you got 100 people watching two people scratch their nose, and maybe those two people are the ones dominating the conversation. That's not engagement. That might be feedback for the speaker, but that's not engagement. So what you really need to have is small groups of people, typically 2 to 8 people, somewhere a maximum 20 people. And I really mean maximum. And there needs to be a conversation. You need to be able to have at least 5 or 6 of those 8 people speaking to each other. And if there's 2 people just kind of sitting, listening in, okay. But if you have a majority, say you have 90% of those people just listening in, it's no longer engagement. It's just, you've got a few people watching a conversation. So I think
So you're talking about creating more breakout sessions within a webinar or a conference, or?
Yeah, but giving people options to choose their own breakout sessions and being able to
being put in a room and just says, oh, by the way,
exactly. You like those people.
So you're going to be like with these people.
Yeah, exactly. So you need to have, it's just like at a conference, you know, and we draw a lot of the understanding for successful virtual events from real life, live in-person events. And so you need to be able to have that ability to go choose the people that you're speaking with and maybe wait in line to speak to somebody who's popular, but still have access to them. Those are important components. You can't just ignore those and say, well, it's virtual. It's not the same. It's very much the same because it's human behavior to want to pick and choose a little bit. So I think that gives people a lot more fulfillment in participation to have that ability to choose a little bit on her.
Yeah. And on top of that, I look at it from a speaker's point of view. I don't know how many times I've been a speaker. I've done my talk. Even if I've done a Q&A, and all of a sudden the top of the hour comes off, boom, off I go. I'm kicked out of the system and I've got to reboot into the system under a user. And there's no ability for anybody to contact me. There's no moving me to some virtual green room or side room where people can sit there and come up to me and talk to me afterwards, find out information, have a dialogue, whatever, like it is when I'm coming off stage. When I come off stage, you're usually the side of the stage. There's a group of people wanting to talk to you, maybe sign a book, maybe have an engagement call, talk to you about a future talk. None of that seems to be taken into consideration when they're booking speakers today. And I find that what can organizers do better in order to be able to have an event be more engaging and interactive, to be able to create almost that live feeling without being live and be able to bring that emotion and that connection into the game.
And you bring up a really interesting point. And I know we've done some events together, so you kind of know how we would handle it. We would give you that space where you'd be able to sit and people would come up to you and have access to you. And it's very clear that this is where the speakers are sitting. And, you know, we would just direct you prior to go sit over here, or we would pre-stage you in that space. And people, that there would be different times of the event where people had that choice that we talked about to be able to come and interact with you. And then, you know, some of that is, how do you engage with people on your own? How do you connect with people once the speaker component of it's all finished? Are you asking people to come see you at the table? Are you instructing people? So there's still an element of telling people what's next, not necessarily telling people what to do, but prompting them and saying, okay, Ben's going to be sitting at the table over here in this breakout room over to the left here. Make sure that you go visit him after the presentation's all done. He's giving away gift cards or signing books or whatever have you. And if you just have questions NFTs for him, that's a great place
books.
To do
there
it.
There we go. We'll give there away NFTs of my books.
I like that. So, you know, I mean, you really have to kind of make sure that you have a little bit of a plan. But overall, there are options to provide some of those same interactions that you would have had in a real life engagement virtually. You just have to think through how all that would work and what is the alternatives. You know, what is the 1-2 comparison that you would make for, against a real life event? How do you make that in a virtual space as well?
And it's funny, and I'm going to go back to something that I almost overlooked. It's the comment that you made about water cooler moments and how important they are. I don't know how many times, and I'm sure the audience as well, where I'm in line for a drink, or I'm in line at buffet, or I'm just coming out of a conference or going into a conference or going into a lecture, whatever, and you run into some stranger and you pick up a conversation. And those are the things that become the most meaningful part of the conference, the webinar, the workshop, or whatever that you go to, because all of a sudden you've made a friend, or you've made a potential friend, or a potential acquaintance, or a potential client or vendor, or whatever. And it's those quiet little moments that really is why we go. That's why I get on planes. That's why I spend the money for hotels and conferences and food and everything that goes along with it. It's not the structured event so much. It's the people that I meet along the way. So how, I mean, I know that Remo, the software that you guys use, enables that to happen in ways before and afterwards, like during the actual presentation itself. Okay, it's all eyes forward. Pay attention to us. We're having a conversation now. Yes, there's ability for some back and forth engagement, but talk to me about before and after. Talk about a virtual room that enables people to actually have the ability to shake hands, meet each other, and actually have those one-on-one conversations.
So just because I know that a lot of people probably won't go look at the page that we have illustrations on of what we're actually talking about here, I'll kind of paint a little bit of a picture as to what that looks like. So we literally design a visual representation of a room with tables and chairs and couches, maybe a bar if it's appropriate. And we lay all these things out kind of in front of a viewer in point and click kind of way, but it's very, it draws the user in and it feels like you're actually there. It sounds a little bizarre. It's not like a video game necessarily where, you know, you have to press the up key on your keyboard to move forward. It's not like that at all, but there are spaces that you can pick and choose from and it's visually represented. And all of those spaces, users can go use those spaces. Each one of those spaces, for instance, the bar, certainly a crowd favorite typically, will have lots of little seats there. And that grouping of seats is basically its own, for lack of better terminology, breakout room. And so anybody who sits down at the bar can speak with anybody else at the bar. And you can split it up differently. You know, you could do 2 seats or you could do 4 seats. But generally, that group at the bar is having a conversation. And the same goes for the couches off to the left or the right or the VIP section. You know, there's lots of ways to design it. But the whole point is that we try to make it a visual experience, which helps to bridge the gap to what you are used to experiencing in a live in-person event. So you referenced like the before and after. Before the presentation and after the presentation, you have the opportunity to go have conversations at these tables with whoever's in the quote unquote building. And we may pre-stage speakers in certain lounges or over at couches. Maybe they're at the bar. We put bartenders behind the bar to kind of give that banter feeling. You know, we really try to like build in the experience. And so during those times before and after, we find that attendees kind of connect with each other. They go over, visit with the speakers. I know back when things were in person, I would always kind of seek out the speaker or the entertainment. And I would always have a few words with them before the event started. And then after, we would probably sit down for a little bit and spend some time together. That was just my routine. And it's very similar with our virtual environments. And then, of course, you have your presentation. You mentioned being locked into that. And most of the time, that's true. We can certainly set it up that way. But there's also opportunities where if you wanted to keep a space open, just like at a trade show or a conference, that people could go off, have a few drinks together or talk together or whatever it happened to be. Maybe they'll consider it the lobby, right? We'll go out there to just have a conversation while the presentation's going on, because that's where everybody else's attention is, but you want to have access to the premium people. Maybe they're out in the lobby. So we can set it up to be able to do all those different types of things. And it doesn't feel forced or contrived. Like, all the platform is designed to make that a very fluid transition for everybody. But yeah, I mean, if you got different phases, you got different spaces. It's just important how you design it and put it all together.
And what's really important is if you have 12 different tables set up and each one is a table of eight, you can have 12 different sets of conversations going on, because the person who's at table one cannot hear the person that's at table two. So you're only hearing the conversations at table one. And if you sit down at table one, you have a conversation, you go, you know what? There's no one here I'm interested in, or I'm bored, or I'm ready for my next conversation. At any time, you look for a table that's got an open space, you click on that chair, all of a sudden you're moved to that table and you're part of that conversation. So it allows you to control where you go, who you're with, and say, oh, I've been looking for that person. Okay, there they are. Okay, click. Okay, I can go join that table virtually as long as there's room. And I think that that ability to control and the ability to have choice is huge. It enables us psychologically as human beings to sit there and say, you know what? I'm interested in this person. I'm not interested in this person. I can make the choice whether I stay or I go.
Or you can invite them to a completely new space and have a private conversation with them too. If maybe they, you never know, they may not be enjoying the conversation they're having as much as either. So you can always call them over. Maybe you both are in the same space and can have a better conversation. Yeah, I can't tell you how many times that type of serendipity has taken place. You know, I mean, I tend to be a little bit bold when I'm networking as a whole. So like, I kind of just assume like, I want to have the conversation. This other person wants to have the conversation. And I just try to facilitate that as best as possible. So maybe that's a character trait, but the opportunity to do that. So the ability to call somebody over and say, hey, would really love to talk with you. Let's go sit over here. That really opens up a lot of the same levers or mechanisms that you would utilize in real in-person. And so the networking is such a key component. If you don't have a social aspect to it, you really probably are losing a lot of people, at least their attention.
So let's switch gears and talk about what's next, because we're running short on time and I want to make sure we cover this. Where do you see us going in the next 24, 48, you know, 60 months that is going to take this to completely the next level?
Well, it changes monthly. So we're all still kind of trying to feel our way through this one as far as what's coming next. Is it going to all just go back to in-person? I don't think we probably will see 100% in-person ever again, just because we know that the technology is available and it works. So that's certainly something to keep in mind. But, and the word hybrid is turning into a little bit of one of those overused dirty words. So I like to think of like virtual and physical and then linking them together rather than calling them hybrid. I just like to think of them as giving more options to different demographics, because you kind of, it's turning into, there's the demographic that's a little bit more introverted, tend to get a little bit exhausted when they go to in-person live events. And then you also have the extroverts who just want to be back in person. So I don't think either of them are going to disappear. But I think the opportunity for companies or organizations that utilize this technology from a virtual perspective, their opportunity is that they're now servicing two demographics they might have not had access to with the trade shows only or conferences only. So,
but do you see some flip of a switch, some technology, something that you're looking at that is going to either revolutionize this or change it or enable all those things to happen either faster or better?
I think that there's question marks. You referenced metaverse earlier, and we all kind of quietly are keeping an eye on that out of the corner of our eyes. What's that going to look like? But I don't know that the buy-in is going to be as high as they're making it out to be, because we still have different age demographics that we have to contend with. So not just age demographics, but access demographics too. So to participate in the metaverse, you have to have very specialized technology and understanding. You have to have a headset. You have to understand how the metaverse works and how to navigate it and all these different things. So I'm not sure that that's going to be the next thing. It probably is another 10 years, 5 years down the road where people, that becomes ubiquitous with the space. But I do think that these virtual spaces, like I've been referencing this whole time, I do think that those will continue to evolve and become a little bit more complex and be more integrated into not daily life, but more common, right? I think that it'll be people will be more comfortable jumping into, say, a Remo space and be like, okay, you know, it's Remo. I know how to use this. And it's just going to be a comfortable experience. So we spend a lot of time onboarding attendees just because it's new technology and we don't know what level of understanding people are at. And so I think that as that barrier continues to come down of access, people know how to use these tools a little better, that you'll probably just see them be a little bit more casual and as an option. But as far as actual technology right now that's looking like it's going to change the game, I wouldn't say that I see anything in particular that is like right over the horizon. But again, you know, there's things that we're keeping out an eye out over the horizon that could disrupt the whole process quite extensively. I think if we were able to say that VR became a little more comfortable, a little more accessible, it's a $50 device that you buy at Best Buy or Walmart or whatever, it's a $50 thing that you just, they're just glasses that you throw on, you're good to go, automatically connects to your computer. There's no like software that you have to download, any of that. If you had all that in place, I could see that being a very one-to-one comparison. It'd be a lot easier to get involved in those types of technologies. The problem is that, and we've even seen it with different virtual event platforms that exist today or even came out at the beginning of the pandemic. If you make it too complex, you make it that video game layout where you got a 3D avatar and you have to pick your hair, pick your skin color and do all these different things, the clothes that you're wearing, and then you have to control it by moving around with your mouse and keyboard and all these different peripheral devices. When you pull all that in, your buyout goes way down. It's just people kind of look at it and say, that's too complex for me. I've got to go run a business. I need to be able to get in, get out, spend an hour here, talk to a few people, do my presentation, and I'm done. Versus like, all right, now I have to make sure my computer's good and I have to navigate the space and I have to like spend 5 minutes walking because the game's decided that's an important factor of the trade. You know, it's all these different things. So I think maintaining a level.
It's keeping it simple.
Keep it simple, but keep it enough where it feels like it's an in-person, but you don't have all the things that kind of suck about in-person. Like the walking is terrible when you're going to a conference. So, you know, I mean, I think that the keeping the barrier to entry low and accessible and understandable and relatable to people is really important. So anything that comes out down the road has to meet those criteria. And if it doesn't meet those criteria, you're not going to see it be revolutionary in the industry.
Awesome. So one last question, I'm going to let you go. People can find you at acevirtualevents.com, right? With an S, acevirtualevents.com.
Oh, yeah. We say plural because we've done several hundred events.
So here's the last question. Here's the question I ask everybody as they walk out the door. When you leave a meeting or you leave an event and you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
That is a very good question. So I would say the one thing that I want people to think about me and or my company is that we make it easy for you to gain access to this type of technology. You can come to us with an idea and a napkin and a date, and we can make this happen for you. So it's not something that's overly complex, and we can make that happen for you. The behind the scenes stuff is fairly complex, but we deal with that for you. And so I think that's probably the one thing that let us put those virtual water cooler moments together for you.
Awesome. Chris, thanks for giving us all your wisdom, your advice, and a little bit of insight. I appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?